you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, doctor.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to another episode of our show, Gita, the Memoirs of a Psychiatrist.
Yes.
And today we're going to be talking about chapter 3, verse 25 onwards to verse 35. And before we get there, one thing I wanted to say is the whole concept of, in the Gita, the Krishna referring to himself as the Lord, or talking about me with a capital M. Many people have questions about that, as to what that means. For instance, at some parts of the Gita, Krishna will say, I am the Lord, or you are dear to me, with a capital M.
Right.
Now, the differentiation between saying you are dear to me with a small m, he's talking about the person he was before he became self-realized. When he refers to himself as with a capital M, he's talking to himself as the Atman, the one he come.
Yeah.
So think about, say, Buddha. Before he became Buddha, he was a prince. He was an ordinary man, just like any of us. And then he went to the forest and he stayed there for years and he became enlightened and he became the Atman. He's still the same body, still the same mind, still the same intellect, except that he has become one with his own Atman. He's become self-realized. So it's essentially, he's walking around as if he was God, Atman, in this same human's body. Think of Christ, Jesus, the same thing. So when he says, come unto me with a capital M, he's talking about himself as the Atman at this point. So that's something for us to consider. So the analogies given are that of a river flowing into the ocean, ultimately. So we're all rivers flowing towards the ocean. It takes many, 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 many thousands, millions of lives for us to get there. But as we get there, at the point where the river is, you stop the river, if the river could speak, and you say, who are you? It would say, I'm the river Mississippi, or I'm the river Ganga, or I'm the river Yamuna. When it mixes with the ocean, at the point where the delta occurs, there's a huge muddy expanse of water where the river water and the ocean water are mixing together. But as it mixes and it further goes further, you ask the same water, who are you? The water, if it could speak, would say, I'm the ocean. Mm. So self-realized people actually say, the Father and I are one. We've heard that from Jesus or others, to say, God and I are one. And as for another example would be, as you're sitting around a bonfire, for instance, you know how those little sparks fly off from the bonfire?
Yes.
Each could really say, I'm part of this, I am this fire. And you say, no, you're not. You're just this little spark floating around in the ocean. Yes, but I came from the fire. If I go back there, I'm the fire. Or a little wave or a ripple in the ocean, thousands and thousands of waves all say, I am the same water of which this ocean is made. So just a little clarification. Now, going to verse 25, chapter 3, folks, it says, as the ignorant act attached to action, so should the wise one act, unattached, wishing the welfare of the world. So we've said before that our actions, whatever we do, is always prompted by a desire. So in the deep sleep state, that's a causal body, from the deep sleep state comes our vasanas, which becomes a thought, and from thought comes a desire, and you say, okay, I want a cup of coffee. But it took a while to get there. First the thought, then the desire, then the action. So all action is as a direct result of a desire. If our actions are desire-ridden, then they're contaminated because of what we're going through. We say we must act. And in the Gita, chapter 20, verse 25, Krishna is calling such a person ignorant because he's ignorant of what he's doing. He's acting out of his desire for something, and as a result, you get anxious about your fruit because it's all self-motivated. You're motivated towards getting a fruit, a certain result, and as a result, your actions are contaminated with your desires. You fret, you become anxious, you become angry at something that's standing in your way to get that So you're impeded. Your action is impeded. It's not as good. It's your concentration is not as laser sharp. And if you do it for the welfare of the world, and you say, whatever I'm doing it because I ought to be doing it. And whatever comes of it comes. And we've talked about this in previous sessions. Your actions, your concentration become laser focused. There's no distractions. You're not worried about the end result. You're doing it because you ought to do it. And your actions are far more fruitful. So Krishna says, as the ignorant act attached to action, so should the wise one act unattached to any results or anything, wishing the welfare of the world. So no, not self-serving, not self-centered. So always before you act, ask yourself, what is my internal motive for mm-hmm. this action? Yeah. Why am I doing this? Am I doing this for personal gain, monetary gain, fortune, money, fame, popularity, power? What is my gain? And if you can analyze that and you move away from that to say, no, I am doing this because I ought to do it for the welfare of the world, then the results of the action are far better. Krishna was self-realized. He was constantly acting, but always acting for others, unattached to the fruit. So that was verse 25. Now, verse 26 says, let not the wise man unsettle the minds of the ignorant attached to action. Acting united with the self, let him render all actions attractive. So this is a simple verse that basically says, look, as you start getting further and further in your studies, and you become more aware of the what the scriptures are telling you, you will want to spread this to other people. Do not catch every ignorant person on this, ignorant meaning ignorant of these scriptures,
right,
person on the street and say, hey, listen, let me tell you about this, because you're disturbing their mind. You're saying, he says, you may be inspired by these higher values, but you're disturbing their minds if you shove it down their throat. Mm. If they're interested, they will come. They will seek you out, whether you're in a classroom giving a lecture, whether you're on Facebook giving a lecture or whatever. You know, they will seek you out, they will learn from you, and then they will move to a higher teacher. Because as I said, there's levels of kindergarten, pre-kindergarten, first grade, and all the way up to postgraduate in terms of swamis and maharajas who teach this. So in the beginning, if you sit down with a maharaj or a higher level swami, you may not understand a word of what they're saying
yeah.
because they're talking at such a high level. But you may need to understand from a lower level kindergarten teacher, and then you say, okay, now I understand this, I need to move to a higher level, which is, but you can't push that down somebody's throat.
Right.
Chapter 3, verse 27. Actions in all cases are performed by gunas, which is nature, of prakriti. One who is deluded by egoism thinks, I am the doer. So prakriti here means the inherent matter, which is nature or vasanas. From prakriti, which is inherent matter or nature, comes the vasanas. From there comes the thoughts, and from thoughts come the desires, as we said before.
Mm-hmm.
Your prakriti or vasanas makes up the three gunas. So the three gunas make you act. And so you do things because of with your body or your mind or your intellect. Unfortunately, what we say is, my body, instead of saying my body is doing this, you say, I am doing
right.
this.
Yeah.
Because you identify with your body. Your mind is thinking, feeling, afraid, desiring. You say, I am feeling, I am thinking, I am desiring. Your intellect is planning. You say, I am planning. So the Atman itself is free from action, doesn't act, but you think you are the prakriti when you should be saying, I'm the Atman. The next session we're going to be talking about after this, Lou, mm-hmm. is about the Atman, about God, and what it is. And I think it's going to be a very fascinating lecture for a lot of people. But in that, the Atman is basically without action. It allows you to act, your body to act, your mind to act, but it doesn't do the action. When a person becomes self-realized, that person then looks back upon his or her own actions, feelings, and thoughts as if that person is looking at someone else jogging.
Right.
Crying.
The observer position. And it's so important. It's such an important concept to separate yourself from what your mind is telling you, what your body is telling you, what your ego is telling you.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it actually looks upon it as a witness. And that's why in Sanskrit, the Atman is known as the Sakshi. Mm. Sakshi means witness. And so it says, you're witnessing what's going on. Right now, we're so wrapped up in our body, mind, and intellect, we think that everything is I.
Yeah.
Whereas the self-realized person looks down and says, okay, I feel, you know, looking at it as a witness. Say, whatever's going on is going on. I have nothing to do with it.
Right. It's the difference between saying I am angry or I feel angry.
Right.
Yeah.
Chapter 3, verse 28. But he, with true insight into the distinctions of gunas and actions, knowing that gunas, as senses, abide in the gunas as objects, is not attached. So it's a complicated sentence because the word gunas in Sanskrit means more than one thing, but it's a practical verse. It's a way to look at the whole world. A person who understands the essence of how life functions. The world is only an expression of the gunas or qualities of different things. And as we will see in the next episode, everything around us in the universe, including us ourselves, are really a manifestation of Brahman. Mm-hmm. Just like you take clay and you make a clay pot with it or a clay plate with it,
right?
Mud plate or clay plate, or you take gold and you make an ornament out of it. Everything is clay that's made out of clay. Everything is gold. In its natural form, clay and gold have no form, no name. It's just clay or gold. Mm-hmm. But when you make the gold into an ornament, you make the clay into a pot, you say, oh, that's a pot. That's an ornament. Similarly, Brahman, without an object, has no form, no name other than Brahman, just like clay or gold. But when it forms something like a human being, that name given to that human being could be Lou, could be John, could be anything. That name, that object then has a name. It has a look, a certain look, which is called Rup Nam, and Vyavahar, which is function. He has a function. He can do certain things. Only then does Brahman appear as itself. So the world is only an expression of various gunas that it has.
That is such a great expression of that, because I've been struggling with Brahman's passivity. Like, it doesn't do anything, it doesn't know anything, it doesn't act. And I've been trying to reconcile that, and you just did, because when it becomes us, when it becomes something else, then the action and those qualities come to it.
Adi Shankaracharya, he was a commentator on the Upanishads. Adi Shankaracharya said that, heavy statement to make, he said, Brahman is actually useless.
Yeah.
Can you imagine saying about God, Brahman, is actually useless unless and until it forms something else, such as a human being? Brahman cannot act unless it has an object through which to act.
Right.
Which is, in a way, makes sense, because what she's saying is clay in and of itself has no function, can do nothing, doesn't have a name, doesn't have a function, but you make it into a pot, that same clay can hold water.
Love that. I love that. Right? That made sense of the whole thing to me now. That was important. Yeah.
There is a book written by a person, I forget his name, but the book name is called The Book. That's it. It's a small little book written like 100 years ago, small little children's book. And in that book, it's written by a Christian author. He talks of, but he's writing in the Vedantic sense about God, Brahman. He says, why did God have to make this? So he says, God got bored. He was very powerful, but he couldn't do anything. So he decided he wanted to have some excitement in his life, so he decided to play hide and seek. In order to play hide and seek, you need something else, somebody else. And he said, I can't do it by myself. So he, in this book it's written, created something else apart from him. And so that something else was called not God.
Yeah.
Not God. Mm-hmm. So God made a not God to play with him. And he said, let's play hide and seek. The thing is that God makes whatever he makes so well, according to this book, that not God forgot that he was made by God. And in playing hide and seek, God hid so well that now not God doesn't realize and can't find where God is.
Wow.
And is spending the rest of his life looking for God. So you and I are not God.
Right.
God made the universe. God made you. God made me. God made all these elephants and animals, everything on this earth. That's all not God, made by God, now looking to get back to find God. That's what the book says.
Wow.
So you're right. You know, God in Brahman, in and of itself, has no abilities to do anything. No function until he becomes a human being that can operate with his body, mind, and intellect. So Atman only gives us life, that's all. Atman gives us energy, it enlivens our body, mind, and intellect. But how we act is determined by the vasanas and the ingrown qualities of what we're born with. So you could have sattvic vasanas, which are very pure, and therefore your thoughts, desires, and actions are all sattvic. So you could be kind and generous because your vasanas are kind and generous. Your thoughts, desires, actions, ideas, feelings are all kind and generous. Or you could be cruel and wicked. So your actions, your ideas, your thoughts are going to be cruel and wicked. He, Atman, Krishna, God, understands that everyone else's internal gunas, qualities, are what is determining their actions. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't hold it against. There's no hatred because he sees that everybody's acting according to their vasanas. He doesn't hold it against them. He says he just forgives because that is true forgiveness. Remember we talked about this in one of our earlier sessions. What is true forgiveness? Not saying, okay, I forgive you, but internally harboring resentment and wanting revenge. Understanding that this person is just functioning according to his vasanas and his gunas. So gunas, we have rajasic, tamasic, and sattvic gunas. Sattvic gunas do not come about unless you make an effort. You have to make an effort to switch, to go upwards. From tamasic, you have to go to rajasic. It has to happen. It takes effort. Mm. From rajasic, you have to make effort to go to sattvic. Going downwards is very easy. You can become very rajasic if you want. Just do more. You can become very tamasic very easily. When I first went into college from high school, we were sitting in the cafeteria and I was saying to somebody, something was so delicious, something made of potatoes in India in the cafeteria, bhatarawaras. So I was saying, I can eat a million of these. And I remember this person I just met, first day of college, sitting there across from me in the cafeteria said, sleep and appetite, there is no limit to how much you can increase it. Your stomach can just eat enormous quantities if you train it to.
Yeah.
You just keep eating. Sleep. You can just keep on sleeping. You could sleep 24 hours a day if you train yourself. That becomes very easy. So what the scripture says, going downwards, devolving, is very easy. You can become tamasic. You can sleep all the day. You can be lazy. You can watch TV. You can just sit on your computer and just waste your time. Very easy. Going upwards takes effort. Mm-hmm. Going from tamasic to rajasic, it takes effort. Going from rajasic to sattvic is even harder, takes a lot more effort. So without effort, folks, none of this would be possible. So the fact that you're even watching this, listening to this on your podcast is an effort on your part. For me to study and to impart to you is effort on my part, but I'm grateful that you've given me the opportunity to do it, and I hope you keep watching. Especially, I hope you like the next session, and I hope you like this. Thank you very much for being here.